Thank you for joining us today for the third episode of the Whitaker Report, a discussion with thought leaders about the future of economic development. My name is Dean Whitaker, president of Whitaker Associates, a data analytic company serving the needs of economic development and commercial and real estate organizations. I will be your host as we endeavor to see around the corner. Today, we'll be speaking with Rick Weddle, president and CEO of the Site Selection Guild, a group of site selection consultants assisting companies in their strategic location decisions. Rick has long been a global thought leader in economic development. As past president of the International Research Park Association and the International Economic Development Council, he has a long view of economic development. In his extensive career, he has led several economic development organizations, including the North Carolina Research Triangle Park, the Orlando Economic Development Commission, and the Hampton Roads Economic Alliance. Rick became president and CEO of the Site Selection Guild 2 years ago. Please join me in welcoming Rick Weddle, president of the Site Selection Guild, to the Whitaker Report. Thank you, Rick, for joining us today at the Whitaker Report. We appreciate you taking the time and your willingness to share some of the results from your recent survey of your Site Selection Guild member.
Well, thank you, Dean. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for having me on your podcast. On behalf of the Guild, we think there's a lot of interest in this survey, and we are happy to share the findings.
What are some of those findings, Rick?
Well, it's interesting. So we had 100% of our Guild members respond to this survey in December, and it was the third of three that we have really done as post-pandemic, if you will. And our purpose in that was to really understand the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on site selection, on capital investment, on company, on corporate locations, and then kind of track that over time. So interestingly enough, at the end of the year, we kind of saw this survey come out, and probably the most important news of the survey is that 80% of our consultants, of our Guild's consultants, were predicting or anticipating from their client activity that client activity would pick up and move forward on site selection projects in 2021. Obviously, a little deeper into the year, the pickup is stronger, but that has increased dramatically, if you will, from earlier surveys where we were seeing most projects on hold.
What do you think has caused that continuation? In my mind, I'm thinking things are going to slow down or stop, but they seem like they've done just the opposite. What do you think is causing that?
Well, I think there's several underlying factors to that. One is that while all of our lives have changed with the COVID-19 pandemic, we're sitting at home, we're going out less, we're traveling less, all those things, basic activity has continued, economic activity. And so people need products, people need food, people need medicine, people need all sorts of products. And so the manufacture, delivery, marketing, and sale and distribution of those products has continued. And that's it's just that we found different ways to do that. And corporate locations are having to be re-rationalized to address some of those issues as we see it. So business goes on. It just has had to reroute in a different way, much the same way that a restaurant that used to have 100% inside seating now is maybe making its living, keeping its workers busy by doing home delivery or takeout.
What are some of the changes or adaptations that have been done because of the pandemic?
Well, one of the interesting things, Dean, is the question of how site locators and economic developers work together. And one aspect of that is, you know, the absence, if you will, of face-to-face meetings. So one of our predictions, the second prediction for 2021, is that hybrid engagement is the new normal, meaning that you will see all of the interface being a mix of online, digital, Zoom calls, and a mix of, at the very back end of projects, face-to-face or boots on the ground due diligence. What we found is that a tremendous amount of the work can be done digitally. And by that, we're seeing economic developers become very sophisticated in their use of Zoom rooms to communicate and respond to RFIs. We're seeing drone footage for site locators to be able to visit sites virtually. We're seeing, in many ways, I'll be careful how I say this, but in many ways, that work, that analysis, data collection, review work has become more effective and more efficient because it's more real time in that regard. Obviously, on the final end of the project, there has to be some boots on the ground, due diligence to validate what their conclusions were, their findings were, and negotiate final transactions. But by and large, it's going to be a hybrid operation for a long time to come. And I don't think we'll lose some of that virtual aspect. I think we'll stay virtual.
Very interesting. Do you think work from home has changed anything, too, in terms of how companies are looking at site selection?
Work from home has changed, is changed, and will continue to change this system in this process. Let me talk a little bit about that. What does that mean? What does work from home mean? Well, some people can work from home. Some people will be unable to work from home because they deliver their product or service directly. But what we're seeing corporate America is deciding and finding that they have been able to do and accomplish much in a remote process. And so now the debate is, how much will that continue? How much will it go back to normal? Because we all want human contact. What we're finding is that it's just so efficient and so effective, and the productivity has actually increased in many areas, that a lot of work from home will continue in that area. A second way that's interesting, and this is when I said it has changed and it will change more, and we don't know what that change is going to be, is that remote work is opening new talent pools, benefiting smaller markets because once upon a time in this business, the talent pool was, I mean, you've done all these analyses where the labor shed looked like an amoeba, if you will, around how many workers of this occupation are within a 15-minute commute, 20-minute commute, 30-minute commute. Now, companies can locate in an area, and if there's special skills they need, they may be able to access those skills remotely. And that's changing, I think, over time, how you evaluate the human resources capability of a specific area. As I said, more change to come. We don't know what that'll be, but it's going to be different.
Very interesting. We've been asked to work on a couple large empty office buildings that have been vacated by back office operations like bank credit card processing to help them find new tenants for those properties. Do you see that shift happening in terms of office space continuing, or you think we'll be moving back into the office at some point?
I think it's a little bit too soon to know, although there's some signals there. Some 90% of corporate rents were paid and maintained during 2020. Some of our real estate consultants suggest that companies have said they just don't know enough about what the future is going to be. So they kept, even though they vacated their offices and sent everyone home, they still paid the rents because they didn't really know what the outcome was going to be. 2021 may be a little different by the time we get to the middle of the year, with some level of vaccination, with some level of herd immunity, and some people going back to work, you'll see footprints being re-rationalized. Now, having said that, the space may not decline so much because it will likely take more space to accommodate a workforce of the same number than it has in the past. So they might only send half of their workers back to the office, but it might take the same amount of space that they had. because they have to socially distance, because we're going to be with this pandemic for a while. It's not a light switch that someone's going to turn off suddenly and we're going to be all, you know, happy days are here again. The other question with regard to space, you mentioned office space, the use of spaces may transition a lot. What we're seeing is that while the demand in office space is down, the demand for what I would call last mile fulfillment and logistics distribution space is through the roof. There are a few empty buildings in major markets anywhere that are suitable for distribution. So I would predict that a fair amount of space may end up being converted to a different use. The other change that's happened through this pandemic is the ease with which people have shifted to online purchasing. Now, it was a trend that was underway all along, but it has accelerated prolifically. And even among senior citizens, they're fine. You know, the people who are least likely to do something online that were spent their whole life going to shops and stores found that the ease of curbside pickup or the ease of home delivery made it possible for them to access products and services they hadn't accessed in the past. And so getting that last mile delivered is kind of the big ticket right now. And that's going to be interesting as we see how that develops. I'm told that there's a pretty clear shortage of that kind of space, and that you might see shopping malls, you might see office marketplaces converted to being able to support that distribution and logistics capability.
Very interesting. Speaking of supply chain, how do you think the pandemic has impacted supply chains?
I think it has impacted it in a number of ways, and it's still changing through that. The supply, it's just call it a shakeup. There's a shakeup underway. I think you're going to see increased reshoring or nearshoring, especially in industries like life science, where you have to have access to those products real time, whether at the expense of efficiency and effectiveness. You're going to see more regionalization of supply chains. By 44% of our corporate clients are saying they're beginning to regionalize their supply chain. So that may mean that they have more inventory and stockpiling in a region, maybe a country, it may be a market, it may be an area, but they're not looking at one big distribution center or one big supply location, but how they regionalize that so they can get product to market. Doesn't matter how efficient you are if you can't deliver a product when the customer wants it. We're seeing inventory stockpiling, which is a part of that also. A quarter or so of clients are saying they're stockpiling more inventory, which means, again, reliability at the sake of efficiency, perhaps, in that. Many facilities are being decentralized and moved closer to the market. And that leads to the comment I made earlier about how do they manage the last mile demand, which is due in large part to the rise in e-commerce.
So the home delivery, you think that'll stick? Like DoorDash has just gone IPO and some others have cashed in. Do you think we'll continue to have that kind of, I think last mile is the very last mile to my front door.
Yeah, everybody has an opinion on that. And so if you have a half a dozen people together, you can get about 15 opinions out of them because everyone's got plenty of opinions. My own sense is that we are globally a long way from putting COVID-19 behind us. Yes, it will become less of an immediate challenge day to day for Americans at some point this year, hopefully, but it's a big world. And there's lots of challenges of reinfection and variants and outbreaks and stuff. So we're going to be in a different world for a long time. And I think a lot of the habits and practices of home delivery, curbside pickup, things of that sort that established during this pandemic will continue to some large degree, maybe not as big as it is now, but to some large degree going forward.
What industrial sectors will we be seeing the most activity in going forward?
Well, Our survey showed that the top five most active industries among our guild members and their clients for 2021 are, no surprise, biotech and life science. The ability to deal with and to regionalize or localize those activities. You know, we woke up one day and found out that all of certain products, you know, Q-tips or cotton swabs coming from China, that makes sense in a pandemic. So we're seeing lots of activity in biotech and life sciences as those supply chains are redone. The conversation around what we call advanced manufacturing, which really is all manufacturing, is picking up because supply chains in that area and manufacturing and distribution chains are being re-rationalized. Transportation logistics through the roof in terms of being reimagined. Smaller distribution centers, closer to the market logistics and fulfillment centers are driving a lot of that. Food and beverage processing has been probably one of the strongest sectors and will continue to be one of the strongest sectors. And obviously, software and IT. One of the things, which is the backbone to the whole process, and if you look at how the market's been performing, those companies that are in that space serving this new virtual, online, all the time environment, they're doing really well. Let me make one quick point too. A lot of people don't realize also there's the federal government has mandated certain products to be sourced more locally. And so one of the growth industries, and I can tell you, I've been in this business about 40 years and I never targeted this industry in my life, but it's now apparently a real big opportunity, is soap and cleansers. Now you think about that. You see very few economic developers that say, well, our target industry is soap and cleansers. But that's a very important, we learned more importantly how significant soap and cleansers are in a pandemic and how important it is to get those supply chains to be able to get that product to market. And so there's a lot of growth in that sector also.
Who would have thought we'd be rationing hand soap at the grocery store?
Absolutely.
You can only buy two of those. You can't buy three of those.
I mean, it tells you how demand has shifted out of necessity. In that. So it's interesting. So we're seeing, you know, the big trends are renewed activity, hybrid will be the new normal. Supply chains are going to shake up. One thing we haven't talked about is workforce. Mm. And there's a lot of interesting things going on in the workforce. And we're seeing that the quality of talent is at a premium now. There's a dual thing working in that there's a surplus, if you will, of semi-skilled, of unskilled. There's a lot of people, there's a high unemployment in the lower skills and unskilled areas. Many of those jobs have gone away, but in the higher skilled areas, there's actually a shortage. And so we're seeing both surplus labor and shortages at the same time in the same pot.
Mm. In the same geography too?
In the same geography, because it's been a restructuring or realignment, if you will, of how a lot of products and things are being delivered. Now, as we get back to some semblance of normalcy, those jobs will be picking up in the lower skilled and the semi-skilled. There'll be more demand for that as people go back into the workplace. But for now, it's we're dealing with people who've been displaced and people who are in short supply at the same time.
Very interesting. So there'll be kind of an uptick in retraining and reskilling people. Is that what we should expect?
I think so. And I think especially as we see the new administration move forward with, at this point, I'll say announced plans for work around infrastructure, supporting climate and sustainability. You know, you could see some industries with a lot more emphasis on that create new jobs. I read a report just the other day about a push to for the federal government to be involved in, for example, helping to cap abandoned oil and gas wells that are still continuing to leak and pollute the environment. Well, that's if that were to be funded and take place, then that would create a lot of transferable skilled jobs in those markets that have been devastated, if you will, by the decline in the energy industry brought about by the pandemic and the lower demand globally. So you know, fasten your seatbelt and hold on. There's going to be a lot of change coming as we work through this.
Very interesting. Let's take a look at your crystal ball, if you would, and dust it off and give us a little bit, let's look down the road a little further than just past the pandemic. What do you see in 3 to 5 years? What's the landscape going to look like?
I think and there's the jury's still out on a lot of this. Let me say one thing about the pandemic. One thing that some people said it changed everything. My view is that it was functioned more like a time machine, mm-hmm. in that trends and tendencies and activities that were starting to get underway, many of them were suddenly accelerated. You know, a lot of people were trying to figure out how to do video calls to their grandchildren or their family or whatever, or some businesses use video calls. Now everybody does it. So it just moved us forward. So we really just moved the calendar forward. So we are already 3 to 5 years down the road in some of these areas, which is kind of an interesting way to think about it. And so those technologies will continue to shift and change. We will see improvements and innovation that we haven't yet even imagined coming out of the experimentation that has come from companies trying to figure out how to survive and respond to this environment. So there's a whole new set of technologies, productivity enhancements, amenities that will come, and we'll see that in that 3 to 5 year time frame. I think globally, it is very likely we will see a much more local world. We'll still be engaged globally, but we will be, as these supply chains have regionalized and localized, it will be a while before that shifts, before there's indications that shifts back to a complete, efficient global supply chain again. So I think we will see not self-contained economies, but we will see much more regionalized economies. One of our survey indicators was that foreign direct investment, cross-border investment, has declined dramatically during this time. No surprise, you can't travel, you can't get there. And so it's about the only 50i projects that are happening right now are those that are expansions of existing presence. There's not a lot of new investment in that area. So that will be one. So I think we'll have a more local or regionalized world 3 to 5 years out. We'll have a much different world in terms of our technologies that we use, because we haven't yet begun to see all the innovation that's going to come out of these behavioral changes. And we may still be wearing masks a couple years, 3 years from now. Who knows?
Very interesting, Rick. Thank you for your time. Any events coming up with the Guild that you'd like to let our listeners know about?
Well, we are just opening up our small one-day, one-sector workshops. We just completed one in San Antonio in Texas. It was our first experiment after the lockdown, the pandemic. We have one coming up in April in Nashville, Tennessee. And then, of course, our annual conference will be in June. In Orlando, Florida, knock on wood, and hope that everything trends in the right direction so that we'll be able to have that annual conference. And so they can go on the siteselectorsguild.com website to get access to information about all those events and activities.
Rick, thank you very much for your time today and the insight you've shared with our listeners. We appreciate you taking your time, and we wish you well in your continued adventure.
Thank you, Dean. Glad to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whitaker Report, Seeing Around Corners, and a special thank you to Rick Weddle for helping us understand the changes taking place in the site selection and economic development field as we respond to the global pandemic. I am Dean Whitaker, your guide, and please subscribe to the Whitaker Report on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for listening.